Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with writers in the studios of North State Public Radio. Now here's your host, Nancy Wiegman.
Today we'll be learning the history of Butte County's Richardson Springs, along with the history of the Richardson family who owned it. My three guests today are editors of the Association of Northern California Historical Research, ANCHOR, and a descendant of the Richardson family. Ron Womack is a retired technical writer who has combined his writing talents with his love of California history. He has annotated the diary of Alonzo Richardson, A Young Bride's Journal, 1913-1917, and issues of Butte County Historical Society, Diggins. He also participates in archaeological surveys in Tehama County. Ron Womack, welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Josie Reifschneider-Smith has helped many CSU Chico students format and edit their master's theses and recently authored Images of America, Tehama County. She's the publications editor of both ANCHOR, and ANCHOR is this historical society that publishes these books, the Association of Northern California Historical Research, and she's the publications editor of the Tehama County Genealogical and Historical Society. When not editing or laying out a book, Josie Smith usually has a geology pick or an archaeology trowel in her hand. Josie Smith, welcome.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having us.
And then I also have a descendant of the Richardson family. His name is Mike Boggs. And on a Saturday in April of 2016, he opened the gates of the former resort, Richardson Springs, to the public and coordinated historical talks and tours of the grounds. Mike Boggs, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, since I just introduced you, Mike, as leading tours and talks of the Richardson Springs grounds in 2016, I understand you're going to be doing that again.
We are. In April 18th of this year, we're going to do another tour up there, and we'll have books available up there. So we're hoping everybody can come up.
Well, the book that you just referred to is entitled A Brief History of the Richardson Family, and this is, of course, Richardson Springs in Butte County. So you now are a descendant of this family, and so what can you add that nobody else would know, Mike?
Oh, just my dad telling me stories of Marvin and his times up there growing up, and my dad taking me up there and when I was little. And swimming in the pool and just fond memories. And then my dad passed away, and I got further into the history of Richardson Springs and was approached on making a book. And I really thought that would be a great tribute to my dad, you know, if we did a book. And I'm sure he's watching.
Well, I mentioned that you had this kind of open house where you had tours of the grounds, mm-hmm. and I happened to have attended that back in 2016. It was thoroughly enjoyable. I really enjoyed it. But now people might think, well, I never heard of Richardson Springs. Why have they not heard of it?
Oh, you know, I run into people all the time that have never heard of Richardson Springs. It's just not out there. There's a lot of young people nowadays. Which I just ran into one a few days ago and asked him about the Richardson Springs, and they had no idea where it was at. So I took him in my room and I kind of showed them, but they had no idea.
Because it's not open to the public generally now. People can't go stay in the hotel. When was its heyday? When were people flocking to this?
The heyday was before the war, before World War II. Was the heyday of Richardson Springs, and then the war really put a cramp on it. And then after the war, there was travel to Hawaii on jet planes, and the resort kind of fell in ruins at that time. You know, it was hard to keep up with the tax payments and everything, and it ended up being sold to the church.
So it's no longer a resort because people have other options now.
It's not a resort. It's YWAM now, and they have a lot of conferences up there, and lots of kids go up there and stay for workshops and whatnot.
So you lead tours of the grounds, and I think you'll have the book for sale there in April when people are invited to come take a look.
Yes, we'll have tours walking all the way up to the where the Swinging Bridge was, and the falls, and Mushroom Rock up there, and telling people where the Arrow Point was, and all the stuff that's in that book that's really not there anymore, but the Indian up on the hill.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. And that I might mention that people, when you refer to the Indian up on the hill, this Indian is depicted, and we're using Indian rather than Native American, but is depicted on the back cover of the book. And
yes.
Let me tell people the name again of the book. The title is A Brief History of the Richardson Family. Now, I also introduced people who had another role. They're not descendants of this family. And the name that's on this book, Nellie Eliza McLeod Woodward, is not either of you. Mm-mm. Neither of your names is on the cover of this book. Why not?
No, because Michelle Rader, who's involved with the Gold Nugget Museum and part of the anchor team, mentioned last year to us during a meeting that Mike Boggs had a manuscript written by Nellie back in 1924. And she her parents were. I think it was one of the daughters, Richardson daughters. She wrote this history, and Mike gave us a copy, and we looked through it, and it's like, this is pretty interesting, because people, when they think of Richardson Springs, they think of the Springs, the resort. Mm-hmm. But nothing about the family that came here from the Midwest and gradually started the resort in the Springs. And when we started reading the individual histories of the sons and daughters who came out here gradually, it's like, this is quite a history. This is a family history, and it's pretty interesting to learn where they came from, how they came here, and how they worked hard and succeeded and built up the resort to what it became. From the late 1800s to, I think, up to the 1940s or 50s.
Well, you mentioned in the book that the family history covers 1775 to 1924. That's a really long period of time to have records. That's so impressive. And, of course, in that period of time, you've got a lot of characters. So when mm-hmm. I'm reading, I'm thinking, okay, who is that? But at the back, there's a nice genealogical chart that those were the great grandparents, mm-hmm. and here was, so that was very helpful.
Yeah,
that was not a part of the original. That was part.
That particular item. Because when I was putting the book together to get it ready for publication, I was getting confused. There's so many Nellies in there, Alonzos, and I mean, it got confusing. So I am so grateful Nellie had the foresight to put that genealogy, not only of the Chamberlain family that married into the Richardson family, but also I think there's the Thomason family in here.
And the
Bruces.
Yeah. And because they all married in one big happy family. And for me, I mean, I'm a single kid. I grew up no brothers or sisters, and then suddenly I'm with this huge family. I can't keep track of it.
Because you've been saying it's a big family, but I think people don't realize 10 surviving children.
Yeah.
They had 14 children in 21 years, mm-hmm. and 10 survived, which I guess for the times, birth mortalities being what they are, was not all that bad. And then 2 died as adults.
I might remind people that the voice you were just hearing is Josie Smith, and she is describing the process of putting together this book, A Brief History of the Richardson Family. And the voice you just heard is Ron Womack. And Ron, what was your role in putting this book together?
Well, I had worked on with Larry Richardson, who was also a descendant, back in 2001. Alonzo Richardson, there's another Alonzo, wrote a journal after the family split up, and they reestablished their own ranch up northwest of Butte College. And I annotated that journal and learned quite a bit about the Richardson family. So my major contribution to this book was describing the ranch and what they did to build it from almost scratch, and the cattle drives and the other things, which is that last 20 some odd years of Pierce Richardson's life.
Well, one thing that makes this come so alive is you use the actual words of these people. And that is rare, that you have actual words that these people wrote at the time.
Well, they were not only great letter writers, but they saved the letters, and that is so important.
And Mike Hazem.
And Mike
Hazem. Mike Boggs, I might remind people, is a descendant of the Richardson family, and he has this treasure trove. I think it's really a treasure trove, Mike.
I hope the Facebook people out there have been reading these, and I know a lot of you have, and if you haven't, you can join. You know you're from Chico Wynn, and the letters are posted one a day and have been almost for a year now. Mm-hmm. And my wife, Christy Boggs, has been translating all that handwriting into Facebook, and it's just great. We're learning a whole lot of history of Chico.
And you keep their language, and you keep their spellings, you keep their style, their voice, and they become real to you. They become flesh and blood. And some of these you can really relate to, some of their adventures or what happened to them, and it's just basic everyday stuff, but life is life.
Well, when I was reading a letter, some of the spelling was fine. I had no trouble reading. Some of it, I had to say the words out loud to myself. Oh, that's what that is. Because, I mean, it made sense that if you didn't go to school, mm-hmm. you write how the words sound to you.
Right.
They may not have gone to school, but they had a lot of common sense.
And absolutely.
They were smart as far as working with their hands and just doing what needed to be done.
Well, since you mentioned the letters that have survived, Ron, I would like for the listeners to have an idea of, well, what's in these letters? And there's a love letter from 1828 that I thought is really sweet, and I'd like for you to read a little bit of that letter. This is the young lady, written to a young lady.
And this is written to Eliza Chamberlain, who was the lady that had 14 children in 21 years. But that was later. This is 1828. And it reads, this is a letter to her from a suitor. Dear Miss, I embrace the enjoyment of addressing you by a few lines to reveal to you the secret of my heart and love I have for you. And moving down, all this roving to and fro, no pleasure shall I see till I behold your smiling face, and if no accident happens to me, I shall be out there to see you about the last of June or the first of July. Then I hope we will be joined in wedlock bonds where there will be no more parting nor separation of us until death, and then we will hail the happy day we first seen each other, and as soon as you get this letter, I want you to send me answer to this. Well, with all the courting in the letter, Eliza didn't marry James. She married Thomas Bruce Richardson.
This was Ron Womack reading a letter from their book that they've edited, A Brief History of the Richardson Family. And so here's this nice love letter, and the young lady that received the letter didn't end up marrying
That's right.
the guy that wrote the letter. We're going to take a break, and then I'll be back with my guests, two of the editors of A Brief History of the Richardson Family. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wiegman. I'm Nancy Wiegman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with Josie Smith and Ron Womack from the Association for Northern California Historical Research and editors of A Brief History of the Richardson Family about the owners of Richardson Springs. I was quite impressed that these pictures were of such high quality.
Well, it's thanks to the family who saved them.
Yes, exactly.
This is Mike Boggs, by the way, a descendant of the Richardson family.
My dad took real good care of the pictures, and he copied a lot of them from Larry Richardson, too. He had his own black light photograph where he did his own...
own developing?
Film developing. And it's real good care of the pictures, and he copied a lot of them from Larry Richardson, too. He had his own black light photograph where he did his own
own developing.
Film developing, and it's just great.
Well, when I'm looking at these pictures, I'm thinking even the clothes aren't that far away from what we might wear today. But when I'm looking at their hair or their mustache or their beard, I think this could be taken right here in Chico yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some of the fondest letters that I've read is from Orlando. He took off from the family and ran up into Oregon, and some really interesting letters from him.
Well, I might mention, too, though, that there are the women's dresses, for example, are typical of the time. When I look at these pictures, they don't seem far removed from my family pictures of my grandmother mm-hmm. at that age and at that time.
Oh, yeah.
Or pictures of my dad when he was a little boy looks like some of the pictures of the little kids in here. So I think people think, well, this is a Richardson family, but it is our history.
Everyone can engage or find something they can connect with. And you spoke of little boys. I think Ned Richardson and I think Larry Richardson, or not Ned.
Madge
mm-hmm. and Larry in the very beginning. Two separate photos, but they're both playing in buckets.
Yes,
as a little,
I was struck by that. I was struck
like,
by that.
And I remember I played in buckets, too.
Yeah.
You know, that's all you had back then.
Well, even my younger brother, I remember a picture of him in a bucket. I don't know what that is, but that seems to happen. Now, Nellie Woodward, the one whose name is on the cover of this book, died in 1950.
Mm.
So she was on the scene fairly recently, until the middle of the 20th century.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she had saved all these various things. And I also enjoyed when you gave the address of some of these people. For example, somebody that lived in 3rd Avenue in Laburnum.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
In Chico.
Mm-hmm.
But now you also say, you didn't just say Chico, you said 3rd and Laburnum, Chico Vecino.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I hadn't encountered that label before.
Well, that area to the north of the Bidwell Mansion in the late 1890s before John Bidwell passed was essentially cherry orchards. And the family, after he passed, really had to resolve the estate. And so that area, they named Vecino and opened it for housing, which housing is still there. And it became a very popular place. And it had its own place name, just like Chapmantown on the south end had its own place name. They called it Vecino. It's still referred to as Vecino.
This is Ron Womack, and he helped to put together A Brief History of the Richardson Family. That's Richardson Springs here in Butte County. And then Josie Smith had a part in putting this book together. And they had assistance from Mike Boggs, a descendant of the Richardson family. And Mike, you brought these photographs, and what else did you contribute to help these two put together this book?
Oh, me and Josie went back and forth on the phone on who was who on because there's so many names that are alike
and nicknames
and mm-hmm. many nicknames and I helped put some of that together, you know, or keep her straight on a little bit on who was who.
Now, a little bit ago, Ron was reading from the book, and it may have sounded like, well, he's having trouble reading. But I might remind people that he's having to deal with spelling that he has to figure out, okay, what is that word? What's the meaning of this sentence? For example, I'm reading along. This was a letter Emily wrote to Jane. And I saw this word, O-T-I-A-N. And I thought, gosh, I never heard of that word before. And then I pronounced that word out loud to myself, ocean.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. O-T-I-E-N was her spelling of ocean.
Phonetics.
And then when somebody was grown, she spelled it G-R-O-N-E-D. Mm-hmm. But that was part of the charm.
That's the charm of it, yeah.
Well, the other thing that's missing in the letters is a distinct lack of punctuation.
Yes.
So you're reading along and you're expecting to see a capital letter when a sentence should end, and it isn't there because there's no period.
Now, I did add periods.
You did add some, and it made it easier.
Hard. It was hard to read some of the letters, yeah.
Well, so I just wanted to remind the listeners that, Ron, if any of you are reading, you're contending with these special, I might call them obstacles. Yeah. But again, that's part of the charm.
But I'm not going to, as an editor, I don't want to take that away and correct it.
Exactly.
Because you lose the voice.
Exactly.
And it's that's what makes it so special.
Well, one of the things that comes true with this family, you look at the early letters, and then you look at the fact that many of their children went to Chico Normal School. These people wanted their offspring to have a more educated life and therefore a better life. And they all didn't end up being farmers. Some of them became grocery store owners. They became furniture store owners, became other things that they wanted to be. There was no lock and chain on them to stay on the farm. They wanted their kids to thrive.
The book we're discussing is A Brief History of the Richardson Family, and this is the family that owned Richardson Springs in Butte County, just north of Chico, out past the airport. Now, people might wonder, well, what kind of springs are they?
Mineral springs.
Yeah, some people think there's a hot spring up there that they take a bath in, but that's not true.
No.
There's only cold water springs that they heated.
Okay.
There's no hot water spring up there.
But the 1890s was a time period when people became very, very popular to what they call take the waters. Mm-hmm. And there was a certain element of healing in the springs, and California was loaded with them because of our geography and the volcanic masses that are underneath the state. So there were plenty of opportunities throughout the state to do that.
Well, as I was reading this, it brought back memories of when I was growing up as a child, not far from where I grew up, there was this resort, and there was a pool, and I don't remember what else because it had fallen out of use by the time I came along. But I'm just wondering, well, what other these places that attracted visitors because they were supposed to be healing?
Mm-hmm.
This is before Big Pharma, and we couldn't go down to a drugstore and buy a pill for something. And where did they get the idea that these waters were healing?
From the Native Americans.
Mm-hmm. Now, we mentioned, Mike, you mentioned, this is Mike Boggs, mentioned that the Indian, you call him the Indian, was up there. And in what way was he depicted up on Richardson Spring property?
It was Chief Healthwater is what he was named for. And his picture was taken. He was in 1932, he was up there at the springs with the Detroit Tigers.
Yeah, now you might mention that this attracted some
pitcher from the team, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Here's a famous guy from the Detroit Tigers. And go ahead, Mike.
I think in 1932, he was done playing baseball. I think he was a scout. I think he was up there scouting the Detroit Tigers and trying to, I'm assuming, because he never played for Detroit, but he was a baseball scout. And he ended up doing the pose for the Native American Indian drinking the water, which was on all the labels and everything.
So in the actual photograph, he has maybe a little more clothes on, and then the sketch.
I think that's what he's wearing.
It was a little different.
A little loincloth on him.
In the photograph, it was a little wider. It was this wide white band.
Yes, correct.
But you're right. He didn't have on a lot of clothes.
Right.
But it shows him. What is he doing in the photograph or in this illustration?
He's drinking water out of the spring. Mm-hmm.
So Mike may have forgotten, and he's got something tied around his head. But this was an actual photograph of the model was a Detroit Tiger.
Yes.
Formerly. Speaking of famous people who came there, I had always known that scenes in Gone with the Wind were filmed in Bidwell Park. I did not know that the crew went to Richardson Springs and filmed a scene in the hotel there for Gone with the Wind.
Yes.
So I want to go back and watch Gone with the Wind again. I want to look for that scene. So you have this India. What became of this? How big was this portrait, if I want to call it that, of the Indian?
Oh, there was a metal sign up there. You know, I'm not sure how long it was, but it was pretty good size because you could see it from all the way down at the hotel and look up on the cliffside and see it up there. It was made of metal.
You can see it from the highway, too.
Yeah, it was probably pretty large. I'm going to say like 100 feet long.
What, did it survive? Is it still around?
Nobody knows where it is. And being it's iron, it's probably been recycled and it's gone away because nobody knows where it is.
Well, one reason it would be difficult to find some of these things is that a lot of things happened during the long history of this resort. What kinds of things came along that they'd rather not have happened?
Well, fires.
Fires.
Lots of fires.
The first hotel was burnt down, and then the hotel that's there now was rebuilt in the early 1920s by two of the Richardsons, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
they also helped build the courthouse back in Centerville, Iowa, that they hailed from. So they were like master carpenters. They knew what to do, and they didn't have any blueprints. They just did it, right?
They had drawings. I'm sure they drew up some drawings. I have never found the drawings, but they must have had some drawings on how to build this thing, and I'm sure they winged a lot of things, too.
This is Mike Boggs. He's a descendant of the Richardson family, and so he knows the history. And then Josie Smith knows the history because she has studied it and helped put together this book, A Brief History of the Richardson Family. So certain things did not survive because of the fire. And so if the wooden hotel burned down, they thought, okay, this time we're going to build something that's mm-hmm. fireproof.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that it took a couple of years for them to build it, like 1924 to 26.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
And so I thought, well, that seems like a long time to take to build a hotel. But if they're doing the work themselves and they're building it to last, I could see why this would take a while.
They still, the resort still operated. They had tents where they made the meals and stuff like that.
They made a makeshift kitchen mm-hmm. real quick. Mm-hmm.
Like overnight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was shocked.
For the guests and people who
they have a
burnt
hotel
out.
Full of guests, mm-hmm. but like 200 people, I think.
Yeah.
And the place burns. Mm-hmm. And yet these guests did not have to go without breakfast the next day.
That's right.
They set up.
They were so ingenious and clever and figured out how to serve their guest meals in spite of being burned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was
remarkable.
It is remarkable.
And it shows in their life, previous life as ranchers and farmers. It's that same kind of dedication in spite of obstacles. Bears getting the hogs up in Grizzly Valley, and there are droughts and things. They had to survive that, and they just were tough and dedicated.
You had to continue.
And you had the know-how to do
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't say, well, I better pick up the phone and call a carpenter or the electric company. I mean, it was if it gets
they
done.
They had to be self-sufficient.
Yeah, that is impressive, too. Now, when Emily wrote that letter that I mentioned where she's spelling things that we have to say out loud to ourselves to see what she's saying. She also included a sketch on the back side of that letter.
Mm-hmm.
And what could you make of that sketch?
Yeah, oftentimes they did little sketches in their letters that we're finding often.
Yeah, so this sketch she puts on the back of her letter. In fact, paper apparently sometimes was short because one guy says, well, I'm running out of paper. I got it in this letter.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a rather busy letter. She's got some animals. It must be mules running across the page. And this house where she labels the south facing and the west facing. What else do you notice when you look at that sketch that she included?
I think probably that she's telling a story, what she's seeing, because she didn't have pictures. So she just wrote what she can see to who she's writing to.
She's got, for example, an oak barrel.
Mm-hmm.
There in the picture, and horses, it looks like, that she included on the back. It's a pretty good sketch for just somebody doing freehand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like they didn't have cameras, so apparently she's drawing this picture so her whoever she's writing the letter to can envision
Jane,
her life.
Her
life. So.
Well, this is the place in Centerville, if I recollect correctly.
I'm thinking it is,
yes. Because they went back and actually schooled their children back in Centerville, where the home place was, mm-hmm. and then came back out later.
Yeah, several of them came out here and went back. Mm-hmm. Marvin, my grandfather, came out here once and stayed for quite a long stint, and then went back to Iowa, and then spent about a year or two there, and then came back to the Springs, and then ended up staying there and working his whole life at the Springs.
This was Mike Boggs, a descendant of the Richardson family, who supplied letters and photographs to Josie Smith and Ron Womack, who put together a book, A Brief History of the Richardson Family. Now, I mentioned Emily's letter to Jane, where she included a sketch. Something else that was really interested is you have Emily Richardson's obituary from a November 1923 newspaper clipping. Do you remember, Mike, what that obituary?
I'm not sure what obituary it is.
Well, this is Mrs. Emily Richardson.
Okay, Emily Wright Richardson.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
She died at home mm-hmm. following an illness, and it tells that she's a member of a family well-known throughout Chico and the county. She passed away last at her home on Laburnum Street after an illness that had confined her to her home for some time. She was 67 years of age at the time of her death. And then it tells where she was born. Mrs. Richardson was born in Centerville, Iowa, 1856, March 23rd, 1856. Married there in 1873. She and her husband moved to California in 1876. So she was married for 50 years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They celebrated their golden wedding anniversary.
Yes.
And I think she passed shortly after that.
She did, yeah. That's right. That's what it says. Yeah. Last August, they celebrated their golden wedding anniversary, at which a large number of their friends and relatives were present. So that was just 1923, and just shortly before mm-hmm. she died, mm-hmm. that they celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary.
Yeah.
And some of her descendants, the Kindigs, were part of the carpentry crew that built the Springs.
Yeah, the Kindigs and the Wrights and the McClurds and the Richardsons. And the Thomasons all came from Iowa. They were all right there together, and they all came out about the same time. They must have been talking to each other. They're all friends back there, but they all came out to Chico around the same time.
Now, when you talk about their coming out, most people are imagining where they came out in a covered wagon, but that was not always the case.
Walking a lot of times. Yeah.
Yeah. One poor guy's horse got away from him.
Oh, yeah.
And he had to walk home.
That was Caroline's husband.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Nate Thomason.
They mm-hmm. they had been married only a short time. And he takes off with horses and 13 sheep and 113 cows and mm-hmm. two dogs. And the next morning, the horse comes back without him. Horse and one dog comes back, and she's a newlywed, and she's saying, there's no cell phone to go and crawl up the mountain. So he walked back.
This is Ron Womack, and he contributed to this A Brief History of the Richardson Family. After a break, I'll be back with my guests, Ron Womack and Josie Smith, from the Association of Northern California Historical Research. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. My guests today are Josie Smith and Ron Womack, editors of A Brief History of the Richardson Family, about the owners of Richardson Springs. And we were just mentioning this young newlywed, this woman whose husband goes off, and she says in her letter she sometimes is lonesome, because he's gone a lot.
Well, there's a term we use in here called grass widow.
I noticed that. I'd never heard of that before.
Oh, well, that was many, many late night emails going back and forth trying to figure it out.
Oh, when you were putting this book together, you said, what the heck is a grass widow?
Well, my own neighbor, the Fosters, when I moved back here in 2003, Nancy, who's since passed away, called herself a grass widow when her husband was up in Taylorsville with the cows. And that's the first time I'd heard the term grass widow. And so it popped up in this book, the situation where your husband's gone for quite a while and they're known as grass widows.
And why grass?
Because they're up in the mountains with summer grazing. And so because they're up there with the grass, she's a widow.
So she's having to fend for herself while he takes care of the animals.
Yeah, the grass down here in the valley at certain times is all dry and there is none. So everybody drove their cattle up to the high country. And that's where they spent their whole summers up there. Also, there's no air conditioning down here in the valley. So they love to go up there into the mountains.
Yeah, and she's down here sweltering. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They mentioned that in this obituary that I referred to, Emily Elizabeth Richardson, she was 67 when she died, pioneer, resident of Butte County. Tells who her husband was, and it says she was laid to rest, and it gives the names. It also, I noticed in your book, you often give the name of the funeral home. Now, in Emily's case, it was Bicknell and Moore in charge of the arrangements, but I was surprised that there were some familiar names.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I think Bicknell and Moore became Brucey, if I remember right.
I think so.
Yeah, somewhere in there, mm-hmm. somewhere after that, but and that was something that I've seen in newspaper articles going, this was in the 20s, mm-hmm. back in the 1860s, one of the formal parlors was Fitters and Williams. Mm-hmm. And they always mentioned where the funeral parlor was.
Yeah, they mentioned when services would be and who would be in charge of the services. And they mentioned that people who attended the services brought beautiful floral arrangements there to her service. So this was Emily's obituary. Now, there's a letter, Caroline, who is called Carrie, and she writes a letter about her husband's horse getting away from him. She also spells Nate, N-A-T-H.
Right, and sometimes N-A-T-H-E.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I saw that.
His name was officially Nathaniel, and sometimes he was termed as Nat, so he had several different abbreviations of his long name.
Well, one thing I found interesting, as we're mentioning names like Brucey and that are around today, in 1915, Carrie, this woman whose husband, she's a grass widow because her husband goes off and loses his horse got away from him. In 1915, Carrie goes to Enloe Hospital.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And she was pretty sick. Today we would call the condition, severe edema. Mm-hmm. And
I was shocked. You mentioned edema.
Yeah.
At how much water they said they took out of her abdomen.
Two gallons.
2 gallons. 2 gallons. Do you think that was an exaggeration?
No, it could have been, but
she probably felt like there were 2 gallons.
It was a lot. If somebody mentions a volume like that, it was a great deal. Yes. And she still lived. Lived another couple of years, not in the best of health, but able to get around, I guess. And
in fact, speaking of health, nearly every letter starts with, well, I'm doing okay or I'm not doing okay, and how are you doing? Have you gotten over whatever it was? And we just today, how are you is, we don't expect somebody to tell us.
Being sick back then was really dangerous.
That's brought home to us when we read these letters.
Yes. It was very dangerous because there really weren't a lot of real cures until right around 1893-ish, I believe, they figured out how to fight diphtheria. But up until that time, you had various salts and potions and
Mineral springs.
And mineral springs and a lot of elixirs, what we call patent remedies. And, looking at that and looking at today, the only real mistake they made with those is one is they put out a product that was addictive that you could buy over the counter, but they also claimed it would cure you, and that just was not true. It made you feel better. I imagine after downing half a bottle of one of those things, you could plow the North 40 with no problem.
In fact, I have a little bottle that came from somewhere around here, I think one of them, maybe Honey Run, a little medicine bottle. And I don't know now, I don't remember what's written on there, but it's nothing I recognize, but a little medicine bottle. And you just wonder how many of those things are really what they claim to be.
Well, there were several hundred types out there and a lot of, and as many claims. And,
speaking of ailments, we just learned Emily died at 67, shortly after her 50th wedding anniversary. And then Carrie went to Enlo. She had to have 2 gallons of water released from her abdomen. But there was one family member who's just walking down the street in front of the family furniture store.
Right.
Orlando. Mm-hmm.
Orlando. And Mike, you want to tell what happened to this poor guy?
Orlando's heart gave up. And he went down right in front of the furniture store. Man couldn't be revived, and that's where he passed away.
Well, and this is at 8th and Main Antiques where it is right now. And at the entrance, at their entrance in tile, it says Richardson's Furniture Company, because Clarence Richardson bought that section there, and he bought an established furniture store and took it over. So that where 8th and Main is now, that used to be the Richardson Furniture Store, and right there in front is where Orlando had his heart problems and collapsed. And he was the wanderer of the family. He wandered for like 30 years, all throughout Oregon, Idaho. He did just about everything, came back, then left again for another few years, came back, and then collapsed and died.
Well, so many of the photographs in the book are people, you know, dressed nicely in suit and tie and very formal. And here's Orlando leaning back, kind of his feet almost propped up. And
comfortable.
That's the most casual photo, except maybe the kids in the buckets.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's just leaned back and looks like an easygoing kind of guy.
Like he followed his own, you know, drummer. And that photo shows that.
Yeah.
It's like I'm not going to sit here.
Orlando crossed the Rocky Mountains, the Continental Divide, 3 times on a horse from California.
Wow.
So that's a long ride.
They were very mobile back then. Without the train and stuff, the family members, they were mobile on horse and wagon. They were all over the place.
So after reading the book, a couple of things. I want to go back and watch Gone with the Wind again, and I want to go downtown to 8th Street and Main and look at the mosaic in front of
the entrance of 8th and Main.
What is
Antiques.
Now an antique store.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, gosh, I've been there, but I never saw that before.
I never saw it either until after I did the book. And then it's like, there it is.
There it is.
There it is.
Yeah.
And then it's like, and then I'm picturing Orlando and you know, and what happened to him. And it's like, I'm standing right there. Yeah. So it'll always be, you know, I'll always have that bit of history.
That comes alive.
Yeah, it does come alive. All these little details, like you mentioned, the addresses where the houses were, it makes that area alive, because once you go down an avenue, it's like, oh, yeah, that house, that used to belong to so-and-so. You'll never go past that place again without thinking about that and thinking of the family and thinking about the history. And that, to me, that is what engages and makes everything so special. And I wanted to briefly mention that this book is about the family. But because there's so much history that we could not cram in here, we plan on doing a second volume that focuses on the resort itself and the movie stars and all everything that people have heard about. But that'll be an undertaking because we've got more stuff to go through that Mike has. And we've been in touch with other Richardson family descendants who have the history and the stories. And people who have bought this book, they've commented that, yeah, my dad worked there in the 40s or 50s, and they have stories. So we've got a lot of contacts to make.
The surface.
Yes.
Well, I have wanted to write down some of the addresses and not, you know, bother the people who live there now.
Right, right.
But I have wanted to ride by there and think, gosh, is that the house?
Well, it engages people because they had a house or two out on Anita Avenue north of town. And I've had people just, well, I never knew that. I want to know where those places were. So people are getting in their cars and looking, you know. So
another thing I wondered, because one of the photographs, and we mentioned fires as being a hazard, but when the flood, this terrible flood came, and there's a photograph in the book of the Diamond Match Company with the water up, and I began to wonder, because I know houses that are now where the Diamond Match Company was, and I thought, gosh, I wonder if those houses, because some of them were built in the 20s, and I'm wondering, well, Were those houses affected by that huge flood?
Probably were.
Probably. Yeah, I'm sure they were. Yeah, mm-hmm. That was before Shasta Den came along and flood control.
1937.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. 1937, when that terrible flood, and like I say, there are houses there in the Diamond Match area that were built in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So, but apparently, I think the flooding was worse north of town. Now, they're also included. People might wonder, well, could we afford to go to a place like this? Was it expensive? And, of course, the dollars are certainly different today.
Yeah.
But I was glad you included this, what the fees were for various things. Do you remember any what the charges were for people who went, say, this happened to be in 1906?
Oh, you know, I have it all at home.
On page 222.
Is it?
222.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on.
And, in a lot of their pamphlets, they always put out what the cost of staying there is or was at the time.
Yeah, the rates at the hotel, including room, board, and baths, were $12 to $16 per week, but transients and campers' baths were 50 cents each. Single meals were 50 cents. Horses to hay, 50 cents per day. To hay and grain, $1 per day. Stage fare was $1 each way. Trunks were 50 cents extra.
So this was 1906. I was kind of surprised. Those prices seem pretty steep to me, but
figure that you could rent a two-bedroom house in about that time period cost you right around $20 a month. So you're going to go and spend $12 to $16 a week, it amounts to, we make the house payment or do we go to the Springs?
But they did have slots for campers for 50 cents each. So.
Yeah, it was called O'Brien's Camp, and it was down there by the creek, and that's where a lot of people camped.
Well, you have a stage with some horses in the facing page pulling this wagon. So a lot of people can fit on that wagon. I was surprised. It's not like a stagecoach where maybe four people sit facing each other. These wagons held a lot of people. In fact, you had a motor car that was bringing guests, and I counted 14, there may have been more, counted 14 people in this motor wagon that would take people to the Springs.
It was a special excursion. Be like a stretch limo today, only it was open.
Yeah, and I didn't even know such a thing existed, so I was quite taken with that.
And think, when the weather was nice, think how nice the drive would have been horse and buggy going up there.
Open air. And
in the spring
the
with the flowers. And
Yeah, that would be a very pleasant trip. I mentioned the letters that sometimes things just grab you. And there was one letter, because when I was growing up, my hair now is pretty white, but I was a redhead. And there was a letter where the guy, and this is if you want to look back at this particular letter, because this was something that amused me. And again, you quote these things in his own words.
Mm-hmm.
So he's saying, "Now, Cyrus, if I was in your place, I would never marry a redhead.
Oh, yeah.
For you know, but Mother says for you to come out here, for she has a girl picked out for you. Mother says, see you come out here and visit us and set up a doctor shop, for there's a real good deal of sickness here, more than the doctors can tend to. There's a disease here the doctors don't know what it is hardly. Some say it's more like the old spotted fever than anything else. Some say they never seen anything like it before. I've set up with the sick for every night for 3 weeks." So we were talking about the health was always kind of a primary consideration. And here he is saying, just make sure you don't marry a redhead, but come out here because Mother has a girl for you. And we need doctors. We need a doctor. Come out here and be our doctor.
Yeah, Cyrus had gone to a medical school, I think it was about 1864. And getting into a medical school at that time was easier than getting into a liberal arts college. Well, there wasn't a lot to teach, and they rarely got to actually loosely use the word practice on people or cadavers, and they were issued a diploma. They learned all about the patent remedies. They learned about bleeding. People didn't understand in 1864 what caused illness, and so this is the kind of education Cyrus got, and apparently a very smart cookie. His brother Pierce would send him money to help pay his tuition because he wanted him to be the best doctor he could be.
Well, he concludes this letter. This was Cyrus Richardson. And he says, I fear I'm wearing your patience out with this scribbling letter. I'll close by saying, Father and Mother joins me and the rest in sending you our love and respects to you. Please excuse poor writing. I remain your sincere cousin. Mm-hmm. So that was the way he concluded that letter, saying, hey, come out here. And then a letter, this is a couple of pages back, where he's trying to get somebody, the writer of the letter is trying to get somebody to come out and said, there are plenty of squaws out here.
Oh, that was in...
That was Pierce to William.
He roamed over 5 states in 9 years, and not just that he went one state, then the next one. He went back and forth looking for work and also looking for a place to land, and they're looking for land to purchase.
Because you spent a good bit of time studying some of these, Ron. This is Ron Womack I'm talking to now. And Pierce Richardson was saying, I like this country very well. There are some claims to be taken yet. You know, there's land. I expect to get one. And then you can say you can get lots almost cheap as you want them for the money. I think you do well here. So he's trying to get people, his friend to come out. Says, there's lots of Indians here. And he mentions which Indians. He says, there's plenty of squaws. They is tolerable pretty. If you want to get a wife, here's the place to pitch in.
So this part of Kansas, he decided to leave. They had family friends that lived there, and he decided to leave and go elsewhere. It was also the same era 4 years later where the border strife of the Civil War acted out, and the town of Lawrence, Kansas was burned, and there was just a lot of guerrilla warfare back and forth. So it's a good thing he moved on. That was 4 years later.
Well, this, for people who don't know, tell people again where Richardson Springs is in relation to Chico.
From the Chico Airport, it's about 5 miles would be northeast of the airport.
And is there one spring, two, three?
Five, isn't there?
There was a total of 5 springs, correct. There's only a couple of them running now. The other ones have all been plugged off or quit running.
And you list the names of these 5 different springs in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So my guests have been Ron Womack and Josie Smith, who collaborated putting together a book, A Brief History of the Richardson Family. And providing much of this information is Mike Boggs, a descendant of the Richardson family. Again, the title of the book is A Brief History of the Richardson Family. And this will be for sale when Mike opens the former resort to the public.
But they're also available at the bookstore in Chico, Discount Books in Oroville. Made in Chico has them, and ABC Books over on Mangrove. So you don't have to wait till April.
Thank you all.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.